Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. Thanksgiving in the rearview mirror, we approach the stretch drive of the National Football League season. I am your fearless leader and host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host. Hopefully, he's had a time to dry out from a few white Russians over a long holiday weekend, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
I didn't do a lot of drinking. I think I had probably 3 drinks total, which is a little disappointing. I thought I'd be in the mood. Didn't seem to be the case. Didn't go white Russian either.
Really? No. So, what did you go with? Did you go with the traditional Tito's and soda, 7 ice cubes, or did you throw another wrench into the plans?
Yeah, mixed it up a little bit. You went Tito's, club soda, splash of Sprite, Tito's, club soda, splash of cranberry. Nothing too crazy, that's for sure, but kept it with the clear vodka. It's the way to
look
go.
At you.
I tried an old fashioned the other day. Man, is that disgusting. And I know people will rip me for that, but man, that is brutal.
Not a bourbon guy, or just not a bitters orange maraschino cherry ground up in the bottom of your cocktail guy?
Not a bourbon guy. Oh, that's tough going down. You can feel the hair in your chest growing as you take a shot.
The brown liquor will warm you up from time to time, but it is an acquired taste. I know a lot of those old-fashioned cocktails, and not just the old-fashioned, getting a little bit of a revival. It's those hipsters, man, they try and keep everything relevant for you.
Absolutely. So, they're back, that's for sure.
All right, busy Monday morning for us around these parts. Dr. Chow will join us to fill us in on all the injury drama, a couple of marquee injuries to name superstars, and a very interesting revelation that I think a lot of our listeners will find fascinating. But we'll get to that in a matter of moments, Payne. I guess when we look at the weekend that was, we may as well start with what we talked about as a de facto elimination game for one of the teams in the NFC North last night between the Vikings and Packers. A game that goes to half 14-14. Coach Zimmer, some pretty scathing things to say about his kicking game. But Minnesota makes the halftime adjustments. They clamp down defensively, do enough on the offensive side, and maybe show a little bit of a glimpse of what we can see with a very daunting schedule going forward for the Purple.
One guy being able to make halftime adjustments and his name not being Mike McCarthy. That doesn't shock anybody, I don't think. Zimmer's defense looked poor early on, but they flipped a switch the last 3 quarters. They were fantastic, and I think ultimately they decided the game. So that's nice to see. And one of those injuries that you mentioned that could be tougher to stomach, that Dr. Chow will talk about, to Xavier Rhodes, could really be a hindrance to the Vikings moving forward down this playoff stretch. But I liked what I saw from the Vikings last night. Kirk Cousins performed very well, still getting too many balls batted down that could lead to interceptions. But I thought offensively they looked good, got the ground game going a little bit. Delvin Cook's look, he's electric if you can get him the ball in space. We saw a couple of those quick passes, and he's just too fast to the sidelines for defenders and linebackers to get over there quick enough. He is dynamic. He brings a different element to that offense. Him and Diggs in the same offense can really be a nightmare. And then you have Thielen, just steady, Mr. Reliable, catching balls, great hands. So I like the way the Vikings are trending, although the Xavier Rhodes injury is a little scary moving forward.
Yeah, we'll see. The Vikings, of course, will have their hands full this coming weekend as they'll go up to Gillette Stadium to take on the New England Patriots. But since I'm in a relatively festive mood this morning, Payne, and we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, what surprised you or what impressed you over the weekend in a positive manner? We'll get to the negative in a few minutes.
I don't know if it surprised us, but the Browns. I mean, I like what they're doing. And it's tough to be right about a lot of things in sports betting, right? Being right 55% of the time is great. And 3 weeks ago, I kind of said this was coming, right? The national narrative seemed to be Greg Williams was a clown and Freddie Kitchens is just some no-name guy that no one knew about. I was fully against that national narrative. I knew what Greg Williams was. And I think Hard Knocks and social media and all that stuff, the soundbite stuff, kind of skews people's visions, right? I know Greg Williams as the guy who basically won Sean Payton and Drew Brees a Super Bowl by holding, you know, Peyton Manning to a net 10 points in that game. I knew Kitchens was a Bruce Arians disciple. And so I know that didn't pay off against Kansas City, right? But there was different elements there. You lose your two starting corners against this prolific offense, and yet you're still there, a favorite to cover that number late in the game. So I liked what I was seeing from Cleveland. I've been on them the last 2 weeks. I just think we're seeing flat out more creativity from that offense, right? The right guys are getting the ball. There's matchup advantages that we haven't seen before. You talk about the script, which set the tone for the game. That was the Browns' first touchdown and opening drive in 14 games. And so Kitchens has been fantastic. Now, they're in the right direction. That's where they're heading. I don't know what it's going to look like moving forward. Certainly, it's advantageous when you're playing the two defenses they did in the past 2 weeks, really the past 3 weeks, right? When you look at Kansas City, you look at Atlanta, you look at the Bengals this past week. But they're at least headed in the right direction. You win back-to-back games. That is a huge accomplishment, I think, for the Browns. They hadn't done that since November 2014. So I like the way things are trending right now. And Baker Mayfield, he's getting put in good spots, and we see what that looks like. He can execute when he's put in good spots.
Yeah, finally something to be excited about for the much maligned Browns fan base. One interesting side note there, I'm not sure if all of our listeners caught it. I know it caught a lot of attention through social media and also video tribute, so to speak. Demarius Randle making the pick of Andy Dalton, going over and handing the football to Hugh Jackson. You love some of the gamesmanship there. You can talk about, we can say what we want about the interaction between Baker and Hugh at the end of the game, but Hugh is fired, and I'm sure those two will lock horns plenty if Hugh Jackson ultimately is named head coach of the Bengals somewhere in the near future. Aside from the Browns pain, anything else really impress you that you were inspired by from some of these Week 12 performances?
I think it's Russell Wilson. I know the team didn't perform well, but I like Russell Wilson, man. He just doesn't get enough credit. He's magical. And I think there's kind of this, for me, you have to be able to distinguish the two, right? I think if you lined up, and I'm talking about guys that know what they're talking about, right? Guys that know the quarterback position. If you lined up, you know, 100 guys that knew the quarterback position, said, hey, pick out your five best quarterbacks, Russell Wilson probably isn't one of those guys. But if you ask those same guys the question, hey, who do you want with the ball late in the game? Name me your five. Russell Wilson's going to be at the top of that list. And he's winning games that the Seahawks shouldn't win, much to our chagrin, because I know we have the win total under. They've been outgained the last 2 weeks by 2 yards per play. He has taken them from down 7 late in these games to winning. And I was looking at some of these numbers. He was electric last night on Sunday. 17 blitzes on 33 dropbacks. Okay, so he saw pressure. He saw blitzes on over 50% of his dropbacks. Completed 10 of 15 passes on those blitz downs for 192 yards. Had the deep bomb on fourth down to Moore that tied the game on 4th and 3. He was blitzed on that down. He was just ridiculous and is really the only reason Seattle won, because Seattle didn't play well yesterday other than Russell Wilson.
Well, you mentioned that, and I'm glad you said it, because I mean, I can always be the bearer of bad news, because with the good comes the bad. And while we heap some of the praise on Russell Wilson, you talk about how he masks a lot of the deficiencies for this Seahawks team. What do we make of the Panthers bad? I mean, they lose at home, they score 27 points. You alluded to the fact from a net yards per play perspective, 8.4 to the Seahawks 6.5. The two momentum drives, as you always like to talk about, to start the game and to start the second half, they come up short on downs inside the 5 with a chance to set the tone off the 2-game losing streak. The second half, there is a pick in the end zone. Then they lose one of their more talented cornerbacks, which isn't saying a whole heck of a lot, but the Panthers now mired in a 3-game losing skid.
It's funny how this works, right? And it's all about timing the market. And sometimes you're going to be off, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're wrong. And so a lot of our listeners will be like, hey, you know, you guys screwed the pooch and got mud on your face in the Ravens game. And that's a game where, when we were talking about it, said, hey, listen, one of these teams is actually a net negative in yards per play, and we think they're a little overrated. And that was the Carolina Panthers. Sure, they go out and win that game, but what we said wasn't wrong. Right. And we've seen that the last 3 weeks. Now, Defensively, they're a mess. They don't stop the run as well as they used to. The secondary is an absolute abortion, and you mentioned the injury to a starting corner who's not very good, but Corn Elder went in there and just got absolutely toasted. I know a lot of Miami guys listen to this know Corn Elder. He wasn't very good. There was some huge turnovers we saw in the first half, the fourth and short. Cam gets stuffed. We saw Cam throw the pick in the end zone. So two of those drives deep down in that territory where you're reliant on Cam, you're reliant on your superstar, he fell short in those two regards. Those were the two plays, I think, that probably turned the game and decided it and allowed Russell Wilson to be magical late. But in a game like that, you don't want to call it a must-win. They're still in the playoff hunt, but that's a huge game to drop right there, especially from an emotional standpoint. They're trending poorly right now. They could get healthy, though, this coming week.
When we look at other teams that were a little disappointing, I mean, one coach already loses his job this week, offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett for the Jaguars. They can do what they want to point the fingers at him, but when you give Blake Bortles an extension and say that he's going to be your quarterback going forward, there are clearly much bigger issues taking hold in North Florida, a team a lot of people thought could get back to the AFC Championship, now sitting at 3-8 on the campaign. But Payne, I wanted to get your take. I know we had this game over the total. Thankfully, got an early number there, so we're able to get to the window, but it should have been much easier. And specifically with the New York Giants, they go out in the first half. They look like a dynamic offense. The injury issues plaguing the Philadelphia Eagles, well chronicled. But in the second half, this is how the Giants' drive summary went. 3 plays, -4 yards, 5 plays, -2 yards, 3 plays, -10 yards, 8 plays for 56, ultimately resulting in a field goal, 3 plays, 7 yards. Now, they finished the game averaging 7.1 yards per play. That's despite a second-half offense where they averaged less than 2.5 yards per play. And Saquon Barkley, 130 yards of offense, 130-plus in the first half, 11 in the second half. What the hell is going on with the Big Blue?
I'm still trying to calculate your yardage data there. I'm coming up with 51 yards on 22 snaps in the second.
Yeah, not exactly. Not exactly ideal if you're trying to win a football game, especially within the division.
Yeah, Shermer got conservative. The formations he was using were a bit wonky. I've talked about this ad nauseum. The formations that the Giants need to be using, it always needs to be a 2 tight end set. Just have one guy in there as an added blocker to help that offensive line. Certainly Philadelphia's defensive line started to get a little bit more pressure. Shermer didn't get his two best playmakers the ball in the second half. It was that simple. Saquon didn't touch the ball. Odell didn't touch the ball enough. Like, none of those guys touched the ball enough. Those are your two guys. Those are your two horses. You had Beckham after the game saying, hey, the game plan wasn't very good. And partly why we liked that game over was the slew of injuries to the Eagles' defense, right? They had 5 guys in the secondary that were being replaced. Had a couple guys on the defensive line that were a little banged up. Hicks, their all-world linebacker who's very good in coverage, he was out. And then I thought, you know, we would see certainly a trend up from the Philadelphia offense. And we probably did. Even in the first half, started a little shaky. You know, you had 2 drives there that were in plus territory that didn't result in any points. So I thought that was pretty poor. But, you know, I don't know what the Giants are doing. I don't want to say they quit on the season, although I think that's what some are indicating in the second half. At this point, I doubt you're getting the first overall pick. There's worse teams. And it felt like the vibe in the locker room had changed off the 2 wins. People were starting to say, hey, Odell kind of took charge of this team. He called for 8 straight wins. They'd won 2 in a row. They were certainly in position to win this game up 19-3, and they let it slip by the wayside. I don't think they were tanking in the second half. I don't. I just think Philadelphia changed a little bit defensively, and Shermer was pretty bad, got really, really conservative.
Yeah, it's just been one of those curious tales, and you wonder what's going on with the Giants. I'll be interested to see how they ultimately play out the stretch. But if you're going to talk about the Giants and some of their deficiencies, like we mentioned, we give the Browns credit for going on the road and dominating the Cincinnati Bengals. But man, Payne, what do we do with the Bengals at this point? You know, ill-prepared defensively again. I know they're dealing with a ton of injuries. Andy Dalton a little bit nicked up. But this team seems to be an absolute mess despite a start to the season where people were going, man, you know what? Maybe Marvin Lewis has turned this ship around a bit.
What you do with them, you fade them. And that's exactly what happened this past week, and it's why a 3-point favorite turns into a 1-point underdog. And so we've been calling for this for a while now, that Cincinnati is extremely overrated, and you can rewind the tape, and we've been saying this ad nauseum for weeks and weeks now. A couple of those wins early in the season, you know, the late score against Atlanta, not very good Atlanta team, like some of those wins don't look as good, but they've also been decimated by injury. That was the biggest thing. The linebacker position's an absolute mess, just absolutely decimated with injury there. Your defensive leader, who calls your plays and Vigil, hasn't played in weeks. You're not getting pressure from up front. A lot of those guys on the defensive side are a little bit banged up. You don't have AJ Green in a game that's probably going to require some scoring. So you name it. I mean, there's a lot of issues from coaching to injuries. The Bengals are a full-blown mess right now. It'll be interesting to see the status of Andy Dalton and his finger. Jeff Driscoll, not sure he's the answer, although he did play okay, I thought. But, I mean, he's not going to win you ball games, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, a team clearly trying to figure out a lot of things. And one of their division rivals let a glorious opportunity for a victory slip through their fingers. And I know we haven't had a Mike Tomlin rant. I'm not quite sure we're ready for it on this particular podcast, given the way things went against Denver. But you look at the Steelers. Big Ben interceptions, James Conner costly fumble. The Steelers, yardage-wise, outgained the Broncos 527 to 308. 6.9 to 5.8. As far as yards per play are concerned, run 23 more plays or plus 8 in first downs, but finish the game with a minus 4 turnover ratio. I mean, is this the Steelers' road performance that we'd been expecting, that they were able to dodge a bullet against Jacksonville and ultimately caught up with them here?
Listen, it was nice to be on the wrong side and win for once. And we usually don't get that. So, I thought First of all, let's put it in this perspective. Denver didn't quit on the season, which is nice to say because they don't really love Vance Joseph. So that was good to see. I didn't think Pittsburgh performed poorly. They just were snake-bitten a little bit. Big Ben turned the ball over. Down to down, I thought they looked pretty good. At some point, we've been calling for this, though. Like, at what point does the win streak end? This is a Pittsburgh team that we have seen historically, especially the last few seasons, really no show for games. And we've kind of been waiting for that. We're like, okay, maybe Thursday night against Carolina. Nope, didn't happen. Maybe it's on the road to Jacksonville. It certainly looked that way. There was really no reason to come from behind and show that effort, but they did. They willed their way back to a victory. This wasn't one of those games where they no-showed. So we still haven't seen that. I know the result wasn't there, but despite being a minus 4 in turnover differential, you can go down and pick up a tying touchdown late there, send it overtime and win the game. It wasn't this non-effort type performance that we have seen traditionally in the past from Mike Tomlin. So I don't know. I don't think we're going to see anything negative from them. I like this team trending forward. I really do. I like the trajectory of them. I like what they're doing defensively. TJ Watt injury was a little bit concerning, but I know he did come back, so that was a positive sign to see. I like this Pittsburgh team this year. They're balanced offensively. The defense is coming around. This is kind of, I remember you proposed a question, 7 weeks ago, on which defense we thought would make the turn. Was it going to be Atlanta's defense or was it going to be Pittsburgh's defense? And we kind of nailed that right on the head. And when you're looking at Pittsburgh defensively now, they've been very good. I know they let up some rushing yards yesterday, but I just like the way this team's trending, and it wasn't a matter of them quitting yesterday or no-showing, in my opinion.
No, I definitely didn't think it was quit or mailing in an effort. If anything, that would have been the Jacksonville performance for the better part of three quarters, where they looked ill-equipped to do much of anything. They were just done in, as you mentioned, by some of the turnover luck, which I think provides a very nice segue into some of the look-ahead lines. And we'll touch on these games quickly. I don't want to get bogged down in them, especially with the Steelers, who I know we'll have an in-depth preview of for a massive game in the AFC on Sunday Night Football when they play host to the Los Angeles Chargers. We're looking at the Steelers number right now at betonline.ag. 3.5-point favorite, total 52.5. Number trending towards 3 through early wagering. The look-ahead number for this game, Payne, would have been the Steelers minus 4.5, but the Chargers dealing with an injury in Melvin Gordon, who apparently going to have no impact on this number, so I wanted to get your take real quickly. Market overreacting to just 1 week's worth of data and Phillip Rivers' record-breaking performance in that win against the Arizona Cardinals?
Quite possible, yeah. Austin Eckler, certainly a capable backup. But I think the Steelers should have success here offensively. I think the Perriman injury, this is probably the week against a team that can run the ball where that rears its head a little bit. I think the Chargers are going to be able to do some things offensively, but this is a little different task here. The number certainly indicates the Chargers are the side. But it will be interesting to see where this line goes. Certainly we'll have more information on Thursday because this is a game we will absolutely be discussing.
Definitely. A little bit of an adjustment here in the AFC South. Colts were a 2.5-point favorite for their trip down to Jacksonville on a look-ahead number. We now see the Colts a 3.5-point chalk. on the road, of course, Jacksonville, betonline.ag. Colts pretty fortunate to get even the outright win Sunday against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, it didn't look good on Sunday, that's for sure. And the Dolphins and Adam Gase kind of shit their pants late there, up 10. Defense continues to give up, I would say, critical scores late in games over the last 2-3 years, not able to kind of hold that lead down. We're great turning Andrew Luck over, and we're good, I thought, through the majority of the game, but just cannot get those crucial stops late. Adam Gase was just horrific play calling the last few drives there. But Colts come away with a win, so you get that market perception. They're a little bit different team outside the dome, but I just think this is – we like the way Indianapolis is trending. We've been kind of on this for a few weeks now. The offensive line's good. This is a division game. Jacksonville at this point, what do you have left in the tank? What are you playing for? You do fire your offensive coordinator. You're down a couple offensive linemen potentially this week with Andrew Norwell. It doesn't shock me the way this is trending, but it'd be interesting to see because numbers-wise, I'm not sure anyone's making Indianapolis a road favorite this big. So it'll be interesting to see who trends towards the ugly dog.
Well, especially a few weeks ago, I mean, we were taking 3 with the Jags on the road in Indianapolis. Now they're catching 3.5 at home. Simply amazing to see how some of these storylines change. Last but not least, the Los Angeles Rams coming off a bye will go on the road and play in climate-controlled Detroit. Look-ahead number here had the Rams a 7-point favorite. We see a blow through some of the key secondary numbers out to the Rams. We'll call them a 10-point favorite at BetOnline.ag. 9.5 and juice trending towards 10.
certainly hitting on some good games this week. Detroit catching 10 at home is certainly an interesting number. The Lions, I think, should be able to run the ball here. So you're going to have to monitor some of the injuries they're having. Kerryon Johnson would certainly be much needed for a game like this. If you can get him back, do some things offensively on the ground and control some tempo here, I think that's advantageous. I'm not sure 10's going to last. That would be... tough for me to envision.
And you mentioned Kerryon Johnson. It's the perfect opportunity to deep dive a lot of the injuries that could impact some of the weekend's biggest games.
Are you injured or are you
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow all of his extensive and informative work on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. And Dr. David Chow. Dr. Chow, I have to ask, I know you have a busy family, but do you at least get a chance to relax over the course of a Thanksgiving weekend?
Actually, it was great because we just stayed in town, and it's been an eventful week. Kids were out of school. I went up to that Monday night game, Chiefs-Rams, did a bunch of things locally, but we're fully into Christmas. Went to see the Grinch play, and the Christmas tree is up, and the elves have arrived.
I'm just glad you didn't have to avert your kids' eyes watching that offensive display. I mean, Payne and I are wet blankets when it comes to that kind of stuff. We like to see a little bit of defense there, but have to imagine quite the fireworks there. And we have a game tonight.
And there was a lot of defense. That's one thing about the game, that there was a lot of defense. There were 20 points scored by the defense, 14 on each side. So there was some defense in that game.
Payne, I might need you to weigh in on this before we get into some of the injury update. Are we going to call that defense? Or are we going to call, I mean, how do we want to try and characterize what we saw there?
Aaron Donald is an absolute freak, and that's why you pay him the big bucks so he can turn a game or two. So I thought there was a couple good performances individually defensively, and I think Chris Jones is one of the most underrated defenders in the league. So I think he'll see a big contract when his time's up in Kansas City.
And we'll get to this game a little more extensively, but want to lay the foundation for tonight's Monday Night Football game, where a total not quite in the low 60s, but some major question marks, Dr. Chow, with the Tennessee Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota. Now, if you read what's out there, no connection to the previous injuries suffered. They're calling this a stinger, but we weren't quite sure of his status. What should we be able to forecast as far as performance is concerned and potential limitations as he goes up against this Texans defense?
Well, you know, the word on the street and what Coach Vrabel is saying and how it's not connected to the elbow is true if you're saying from a direct perspective. Now, admittedly, the Titans themselves initially called it an elbow until it got revised. But whether the nerve is injured at the elbow or higher up, there's usually still some relationship. Think about it this way. If you're driving to the in-laws on Thanksgiving along the highway and there's one off-ramp that's closed, that affects traffic to some extent. But if another spot on that same highway further back, there's a car accident, that really impacts traffic worse. It more than doubles the effect. It's cumulative. And that's something in medicine we call a double crush syndrome in terms of a nerve. So if there's something at the elbow and there's something up near the neck or a stinger or the plexus, it still sometimes has a multiplicative effect. Of course, you can't predict nerve injuries and how severe they were. Certainly it was severe enough to hold Marcus Mariota out for that game. And there's no question he's better and he's going to start and play. But certainly we've seen multiple instances this year where Mariota has played at less than 100%. And they've done fairly well adjusting the game plan, using the glove and, you know, dealing with the lack of grip. And it finally, his arm strength and accuracy finally came back. The good news is that I think they're used to dealing with this if this is an issue. The bad news is I don't know that this is a non-issue, as some are claiming.
Another injury that seems to potentially be a little more severe than the team is leading on. Mitch Trubisky got hit by Harrison Smith in the Sunday night game, didn't play on Thanksgiving Day. What do we make of Trubisky's status moving forward, Dr. Chow?
Yeah, you know, I was at the game when I was looking at my phone when I saw some of this news coming out. So Tuesday morning I looked at it, and by Tuesday everyone was saying he's going to play on Thursday. And looking at the video, it's not an AC joint as many claim it to be. By video, it is not a right shoulder AC joint. If you go back and look at the hit, that's not what happened. It more likely is a rotator cuff contusion or a bruise, which is going to be sore. And that's why I wrote on Tuesday that I don't think he's going to play on Thursday. And it makes sense that he may not play this next week either. We'll still have to see. He's certainly not a lock for playing this next week. But I did read an interesting tidbit, all this media stuff that he was going to play for the first few days. But there was one article that said that Chase Daniel's wife on Monday made plans to be in Detroit on Thanksgiving to watch her husband start.
It's all about the tea leaves, and it's why reading and information is so important if you're going to actually wager real dollars, that's for sure. Another quarterback I just wanted to touch on was Andy Dalton. They're calling it a thumb sprain. What did you see there, and how severe is that injury?
Well, unfortunately, I cannot tell you how severe specifically the thumb injury is, because it was this errant snap, and as he tried to dive on the ball, someone else dove on him. And when bodies are in the way and you're talking about a thumb, you can't see which way it bends. Obviously, he left the game. But a thumb is a huge deal for a quarterback, because you can't spin the ball if your thumb and your grip is not there. The good news is there's no fracture, so that's the good news there. But the bad news is he is seeing a hand specialist, which leads me to worry about the ulnar collateral ligament. That is the key ligament in the thumb. It doesn't need to be completely torn to affect him. If it's partially torn, he's going to miss this week in terms of grip, and it could be longer. So I can't tell you which way to go on this, because the video isn't clear, because it's hidden by bodies. But the ulnar collateral is the big issue. And to me, there is some worry for this, because why else would you see a hand specialist if it's a garden variety? I hyperextended my thumb a little bit. So it's something to follow and watch.
So we could see some Jeff Driscoll, it sounds like. Another injury that I thought was pretty interesting was Melvin Gordon. I think there's question marks from Anthony Lynn on why he was in a blowout when he came into the game a little beaten and battered. What have you seen there from that knee injury?
Well, the current knee injury is to his right knee, and this is actually the other side. It was the left knee and hamstring that was bothering him that Melvin Gordon lobbied to play. And my thought was, you're right, that if they, once they got a league, they'd pull them out. But I've been okey-doked by coaches before, and I don't see say this in a mean way. But you can be the team doctor and say, look, he's on a snap count, and we'll give him 20 plays. But once you get into the flow of the game, you know, it's in the coach's control. And, there's no way for you to, you know, tap the coach on the shoulder and say, hey, he's over what we talked about. you might get cussed out and thrown off the sideline. So, I mean, once medically you take him off the leash, the coach is in control. But hindsight is obviously 2020. I mean, lots of teams, the Chargers were up by 18 at the time when this happened, and lots of teams have come back from 18. I know you're going to say, well, maybe not the Cardinals, but lots of teams have come back this year from that number. But by video, getting back to why you talked to me, the injury, there was a lot of fear it was an ACL. It's not an ACL. To me, pretty clearly by video, and I talked about it last night, it's a MCL sprain. And he will miss some time, but he also will be back this season. The question is when. There's been two reports now that are confirming my thoughts on MCL. One from the ESPN beat reporter Eric Williams, and then Ian Rappaport this morning said grade 2 MCL. So it kind of fits with what I'm saying. He's not playing this week against the Steelers. He's probably unlikely to play next week against the Bengals. And I think everyone, including the Chargers, hopes he has a shot at playing against Kansas City on that all-important Week 15 game for the AFC Championship, probably the AFC Championship against the Chiefs on Thursday night. That's not a lock or guarantee right now, but that would be an optimistic but possible return.
Positive news there for Melvin Gordon fantasy owners, I would think. Two injuries from Sunday Night Football, and we can touch on them quickly, Dr. Chow. Packers left tackle David Bakhtiari left the Sunday night game. It's being reported multiple knee injuries. Did you see anything there? And maybe what's the status of the man that protects Aaron Rodgers' blindside?
Well, you know, it's never a good sign when you try and come back and you leave again. I mean, that it's indicating that there's more to it. Didn't get good video on it, but I think you can count on him being at best limited next week, if more likely out.
And the second one from that game is Xavier Rhodes. Looked like he got burnt deep there by Devontae Adams. He came up clutching his hamstring. Anything concerning there?
Very concerning. Looking at video here, and it's just video. There have been no reports from the team or anyone else on this. So it's just me saying this, so keep that in mind. But I'm going to make an unusual call here. I mean, literally, it's like saying, making the call saying the Jets were going to beat the Patriots yesterday straight up. It's that unusual of a call. I mean, this is not a guard variety hamstring issue for Xavier Rhodes. If you look at the video, he does not hurt it chasing Devontae Adams down and making the tackle. He gets rolled up in a funny way, and I put some video up on my Twitter timeline. I'm worried about something that's called a proximal hamstring avulsion injury, where the muscle is pulled off the bone. And if that is true, that is something that is one of the few hamstring issues that requires surgery. I think it is a long shot for Xavier Rhodes to play again this season, no matter how deep the Vikings go. That's just a video impression, and we'll let the information play out. He is getting an MRI, but I am literally that concerned about Xavier Rhodes.
Not exactly what Vikings fans wanted to hear, knowing that they get a big win in the division and how difficult their schedule looks coming up to be without potentially their stud lockdown corner. So something worth keeping tabs on. And last but not least, I know offensive linemen, Dr. Chow, aren't sexy by any stretch of the imagination, but when you give a massive deal to a player and you watch your team slump to 3-8, Andrew Norwell's status didn't look good when he left the game in Jacksonville's loss against Buffalo. I know we can say what we want about Leonard Fournette and maybe his mental state or lack thereof in that particular contest, but what do we think for the Jaguars offensive line, who could be down three out of their top five guys as far as opening day starters were concerned?
Yeah, I mean, Leonard Fournette's mental state, I'd say it's heightened, right? Overexcited, but in any case... Yeah, as we were joking earlier, Shaq Lawson should probably get a game ball for getting thrown out, because that was a pretty good trade-off, right? But in any case, Andrew Norwell, I think, is going to be better than it looks. I think it's going to be an ankle sprain, more garden variety. He's likely to miss some time, especially with the team 3-8. I don't see anything long-term, and it's better than we think. But still, he's going to miss some time with that standard ankle sprain.
He is the best in the business when it comes to injury analysis. And as the stakes continue to get ratcheted up late in the season, every player absence means the world, not only to sports bettors, but to fans. You can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. Dr. Chow, thanks as always for the great information and have a great week.
Thanks, guys.
Always fun to talk to Dr. Chow, especially when you have a quarterback dealing with an injury who maybe we're not getting the full script or narrative surrounding Marcus Mariota's status tonight for the Tennessee Titans. And when we look at some of the other key players, Melvin Gordon definitely going to miss some time. Be very curious to see when the Chargers are able to get him back on the field. But you mentioned it. Austin Eckler, it's now your time to shine, my friend.
He's a good back. He's certainly explosive out of the backfield, catching it probably even a little better than Melvin Gordon catching the ball in the backfield. So I don't think this is as big of a drop off as people think, although Melvin Gordon has been pretty dynamic this season. It was interesting to kind of hear him talk about Melvin Gordon playing a little bit beat up in this game. And if you read some of the tea leaves, they kind of wanted to sit him out a little bit potentially for this game against Arizona, a game that they thought they could win. And I think that's why it's always advantageous if you're a coach to look at the spreads in these games. And I think that helps matters, right? How you're going to design a game plan. If you're a 14-point favorite, you're probably going to design a game plan that doesn't have a ton of variance. But in situations like this where you're a 14-point favorite, maybe you're sitting out Melvin Gordon if he isn't 100%. But he banged the table to play. And you know, sometimes when you're not 100%, it can lead to other injuries, but certainly peculiar that he was in the game late, up that amount of points without Arizona threatening offensively. But I did think that was an interesting topic there where trainer versus coach kind of comes into play. You say, hey, this guy can play for about 20 snaps. And he plays for more. So that's always, I'm sure, a tough battle for
Taylor. And I think, wasn't the play where he was injured? I didn't see the game was traveling for a good portion of yesterday. Wasn't it a reverse and some weird play where he was actually ended up getting hurt?
Very weird play that transpired well behind the line of scrimmage. Let's just put it nicely.
Unbelievable. But who knows what was going through Anthony Lynn's head. Maybe a little bit of panic when you get down 10-0 against the Cardinals before you barnstorm to 45 straight to close that thing out and cover comfortably as a massive favorite. A game tonight, Payne, though, that has plenty of intrigue and playoff implications in the AFC South. It is the Houston Texans playing host to the Tennessee Titans, where you're looking at the Texans, a 4-point favorite at betonline.ag. Well, 3.5 minus 15, I guess, technically. Total in this game, 42.5, trending to the over. These two teams met earlier this season. Again, the Titans won 20-17 in their own building. We talk about some of the intangibles. The Texans, of course, playing with added incentive, the emotion of losing their owner, or maybe, you know, it's better for the Texans given some of his controversial comments, Bob McNair. But I look at this football game and try and figure out Marcus Mariota, will he or won't he be 100%? The Houston Texans, win streak, real or fraudulent? I'm going to give you the floor and allow you to tackle the most compelling element that you think will ultimately dictate the outcome from a point spread perspective.
Well, I think there's a lot of interesting angles for this game, and at its current number, it's a really tough handicap. The Texans' win streak, I don't know, right? I think the Colts and Cowboys' wins look a lot better now, don't they, than when they actually played 7-8 weeks ago. Both those wins required overtime and a lot of good fortune, to put that nicely. You look at the other five teams during that win streak, 23-32. So not great teams, and that's kind of this division as a whole, right? When you look at who they've played, when you looked at strength of schedules, both are towards the bottom of the league. It's just simply because they're in the same division and who they're playing. Offensively, for the Titans, they're trending up, right? I don't think this is a shock. I don't. Like, and it's partly why this total's going up a little bit, right? You know, was 41 was the opener at one of the sharper shops. We're now at 42.5, partly because Mariota, I think, is somewhat healthier. But I think we've been talking about this for a while now. When we talk about these teams a lot, it kind of sounds exhausting. But I like what we've seen from the Titans offense out of the bye week, right? We know what Matt LaFleur was going to do. He's going to change some things up. The play calling has been much better, and they come out of that break. They hang 28 and 34 against two decent defenses in Dallas and New England. You had Marcus Mariota. He looked much better. Let's see what this injury looks like. I was able to obtain a couple practice videos, and I've seen like 50 throws from the full practices this week. He looks fine. He wasn't wearing a glove. I don't know what that entails. I know what Dr. Chow just said, which actually makes me a little more nervous now. But to me, the practice reps didn't look bad at all. He was throwing the ball a little bit downfield, had some nice zip on the ball. The press conference that I heard earlier in the week was a little bit concerning because we've talked about this. He said flat out and said, hey, like I didn't have feeling right away. It's why I didn't go back in the game. That becomes concerning to me, compiled with what Dr. Chow said. That all said, the professional side here is Tennessee. Because of Marcus Mariota being healthier, how he looked in some of these practice videos, it's why this line went from 6.5 down to as low as 3.5. We're now back up to like a soft 4. I think this Titans offense looks totally different right now. And if Mariota is healthy, like he apparently looks in these videos, I just think this is an offense that's trending up. I really do. Like, the market didn't understand what was going on with the Titans offense, right? It was incorporating metrics with Blaine Gabbert for 2 games. 5 games of like far less than 100% Marcus Mariota. And at that exact time that's all happening, you have a Titans learning a new system, and they're learning this new system against the toughest schedule of defenses. Like, the deck was completely stacked against the Titans offense. Finally, you get healthy. The system, you're more familiar with it. The schedule gets easier, and boom. Like, you take off. The Colts game, not quite sure what happened there. Like, it's hard to say this out loud and kind of believe it, but, like, based on the press conferences, and you've seen some of these, Todd, the Patriots game was their Super Bowl. Like, you could just kind of tell based on, like, the player and coach's quotes pre- and post-game, that game just meant more. So it's, like, really odd to say, like, hey, the Colts game felt like a bad spot against, like, a division rival when you're 5-4 and need the game like blood, but that's what it felt like. And then Mariota goes down, he re-injures in the first half, doesn't come back. Again, like, I liked what I saw from the practice snaps. He is going to be going up against the tough defense here. The Texans defensively are very good. I know that they've faced the fourth easiest schedule opposing offenses faced, like back to the schedule thing. But they're meeting expectation, right? They're third in overall defensive efficiency. They're top 6 in both rushing and passing success rate defense. The spot you could really take advantage of them, you know, a couple weeks ago was their secondary, but they're getting much healthier. Jackson returned last week, and then their prized acquisition in free agency was Aaron Colvin, one of the very best slot corners. He's back here. So they could potentially have shored up their weakness in the secondary as well.
When we look at the Titans defense, I mean, are you buying or selling this team as being second in the league in points per game allowed, only 18.9 behind just the Ravens? However, they're 12th overall in yards per play allowed. They've held their last 6 opponents to be pretty one-dimensional. I mean, they've been stout against the run, and when we look at this Texans team, for whatever reason, for the last 5 games, they failed to go over 200 yards passing, suggesting that maybe the Texans aren't as dynamic an offense as we're led to believe with the dual-threat quarterback in Deshaun Watson.
So I'll answer your first question about the Titans defense. I think they're a little bit phony, and I know some people have a tough time comprehending what that means, so I'm going to emphasize this because, you know, if we think an offensive or defensive unit or a team overall is a little overrated, like, it's based on their current position. It doesn't mean we think that team's like rated, you know, say 4th in efficiency, it's now the worst defense because we label them overrated, right? You could be like 10th and you'd still be a little overrated by comparison. So when we say overrated, it's relative to their current ranking. Relative to their current ranking. I know Bears fans got a little upset when we said we don't think they have the best team.
Oh, they got real Bears fans. They came out in droves. They got real fired up. Oh, we'll prove to you guys how that we're not underrated and we beat the Rams. I got news for you, Bears fans. We might actually be on the Bears in that spot in cold weather against the Rams. So pump your brakes. You're just not one of the top 3 teams in the league.
So, you know, kind of my point here is, like, you know, at its core, I think the name of the game, and you hit on this, is for defense, you prevent points. And Vrabel's definitely taking a page out of Belichick's playbook in that regard. But when you look and you try to project outcomes, seeing things like the Titans being number two in points per game allowed, but 20th in total defensive efficiency, 20th in passing success rate defense in the year 2018 in a passing league, like, that's scary. And I think the concerning part about those last two metrics is the Titans defense has faced the sixth easiest schedule of opposing offenses thus far. So, you know, I think this is the reason why we've seen, right, like, guys who wager large sums of money on these games, we think the Titans defense is a bit overrated. It's not the second best defense in the league. Maybe we see that tonight, maybe not. I think offensively for the Texans, it's going to be key to protect Deshaun Watson. That's the key to this game. He is getting pressured on 44% of his dropbacks. That is an alarming rate. There's two guys on the offensive line that are questionable. They practiced on a limited basis Saturday. You're going to have to monitor those. I really, truly don't know their status right now. I think this is a game, though, that Watson needs to be used far more by Bill O'Brien, right? So that Texans offensive line is going to have to protect him because his usage rate should increase, I would think, right? When you look at how this game is going to break down, the Texans are averaging 4 yards per carry. That's 26th in the NFL. They're successful in 43% of runs. That's fifth worst. They get no explosive runs. They're 23rd in that regard. So the point is here, like, if the Texans can't run, and Mike Vrabel's defense is pretty good stopping the run, seventh in yards per rush allowed, Watson is going to have to make some plays with his arm and his feet here. And you look at kind of where he's been trending, hasn't attempted more than 25 passes in a game since the Cowboys overtime win. Has only had 19 rush attempts the last five games. Like, he's not really being used. The Texans claim he's 100%. We need to see him used more, I would think. You mentioned their explosiveness offensively. We don't see it when Will Fuller is gone. That's just the reality of the situation. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I discussed them like 2 or 3 weeks ago. They're averaging like a touchdown and a half less per game when Deshaun Watson plays without Will Fuller. Demaryius Thomas has to step up. He's now been implemented into this system for over 3 weeks. He had the bye. He was on the field for 73% of snaps in the Washington game. Didn't have a goddamn catch. So you traded a fourth rounder for him. You got to figure out how to use him. Maybe it's Kiki Kuti instead. Maybe he assumes that Will Fuller role. Not as big, probably not as much top-end speed, but he's got some quickness. So maybe Kiki Kuti takes that next step. But I think we're going to need more Deshaun Watson here.
Should be a very interesting game. I mean, one I won't claim to have a great read on whatsoever, as I've been looking for spots to go against the Texans, thinking that other shoe is going to drop, mainly because, as you mentioned, in not so many words, that Bill O'Brien doesn't typically play to some of his team's strengths. But when you have a strong defensive line, you have a schedule that's worked out favorably, and you can do some of the things the Texans can. They're winning football games, and they've really put that three-game losing skid to start the season in the rearview mirror, a chance to put a stranglehold on the division, as the Jags have completely fallen off the pace, the Colts a little bit behind trying to make up the ground, and the Titans could do quite a bit of damage if they're able to win this game outright, which would be a massive Monday Night Football victory for them under the bright lights for the second time in just a handful of weeks. Number-wise, talked about it's ping-ponged all over the place. We've started to see over money come in this morning. You think those two trends continue that we're talking about, 4 and 42.5, more or less the consensus by kickoff?
So here's what's always interesting, and you always see some, I wouldn't say worminess, but kind of going at times where people aren't expecting it sort of thing. So this game opens 6.5. It's kind of that dead zone number, right? Is Mariota going to play? Is he not going to play? It's kind of a middling number, and you kind of figure out what to do with it after. Once this video kind of got in the hands of people that are influential, this number started to trickle down just a little bit. So the initial move was on Thanksgiving when everyone's hanging out with their family. And so we saw it kind of trickle down to 6, got off that secondary key number to like 5, 5.5. And then Saturday, it's when the full move took place when everyone's watching college football and concerned there. And, you know, we got down to 3.5. My number on this game is 4. We're now at 4, so it doesn't surprise me. That's exactly where it is. I don't know if it trends off that number. But Tennessee was certainly the pro side at much larger numbers. The total at 41, I mean, it's the NFL. It's 2018. That's tough to kind of go under that number 41, especially when we're not sure either team has great success running the ball, right? At what point do these offenses just say, F it and abandon the run? If it's early on, you know, the game's going to go over. At 42, 42.5, I could potentially see this close where it opened at some spots at 43. I could see that.
Yeah, interesting football game, one that has a lot of intrigue, but what feels like to me more questions than answers from a betting perspective on it. But must-see TV, and we'll get another good divisional game this time next week between the Cowboys and Redskins. So primetime doing us at least a few favors for now. Massive game.
I do think if I do think if there is another wave on Tennessee, and while the full game would adjust, I think if there is a true position taken from the pros again, because we're now down at four, there's still some 3.5 in the full game market, but because we're now down at four, if there is that second dive or third dive at Tennessee, it'd probably come in the first half plus three as opposed to the full game now at a lesser number. Sorry.
No. It's all good. And I mean, we talked about it, and you know, with a lot of these teams and how they handle getting a week off here and there, and what these offense will look like. You know, extra time here, I think, works in the Titans' favor. Should be, a game. Like I said, one that I'm very curious to see play out. I think we're going to learn quite a bit more about these two teams and what we can expect as they both go into their finishing stretch.
And you think about that process to go one step further, and I don't know why I keep thinking of this off the cuff, but it's if Mariota isn't good. Right? You're going to know right away. So maybe you could hold on for the first half. If you get Blaine Gabbert here, you know, if Mariota goes out and you know, he gets re-injured here midway through the second quarter, you know, maybe you can hold on for the first half cover. You're probably not surviving 2.5 quarters with Blaine Gabbert with the
lot of,
you know, that's why I think if there is another wave on Tennessee, it comes in the
first half.
Maybe
we get some mobility. We get to see the quarterbacks use their legs a little bit. Marcus taking off from the pocket. Deshaun Watson showing those flashes of brilliance that made him such a talented dual threat quarterback at Clemson. So, fun game. Be sure to tune in. And I want to say a special thanks to Dr. David Chow, who joins us every Monday to talk about all things injury-related in the National Football League, fantasy perspectives, and otherwise. I feel like we've covered quite a bit of ground as we get back into that finishing kick pain. You know, the holiday podcast schedule interrupts thing, of course, will be forthcoming with how we plan to approach the bowl season. The Christmas vacation time period and everything else that comes along with it. But I want to thank all of our loyal listeners for tuning in. And hopefully you guys had a good weekend with the family or wherever some of your travels may have taken you. Any final parting shots before we take a little time off from the NFL? We'll be back Thursday morning. But, of course, college football championship Saturday looming on Wednesday morning for us.
Yeah. Back to the full schedule. 3 pods a week this week. Championship games in college football on Wednesday, NFL back on Thursday. This is the home stretch, and I don't know if you listened to Tlaib talk on Sunday because the Rams were off. He talked about Bill Belichick's locker room and how the season doesn't start until after Thanksgiving, and I think we're going to take that same mantra here, kick it up a notch at Bet the Board now that it's post.
No doubt about it. Again, you can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman, of course, Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc. Although he doesn't join us on Monday, be sure to follow Dave Mason as well at Dave Mason BOL. But most importantly, at Bet the Board on Twitter for all of your updates and whatnot. Best of luck with any of your investments this fine evening, should you choose to go to the window with a ticket on the Titans and Texans. And we'll be right back here for you Wednesday with all things college football as we break down the college football playoff in the chase for a national championship.